Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly. Hello again, and welcome back to Worth Doing Badly, our weekly survey of the Bible lessons for each Sunday of the church year. Today we will look at the lessons for the sixth Sunday after Pentecost, and the readings are from Ezekiel chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. The Psalm is 123, the Epistle lesson is from 2 Corinthians 12, verses 1 through 10, and the Gospel reading is from Mark 6, the first 13 verses. And here's David Weber. David, welcome back.
Thank you, Jamie. Well, they keep coming at us, sixth Sunday after Pentecost. And we make our way slowly through the book of Mark. And here we find that Jesus is amazed at the crowd's unbelief. So the context is that followers, people attracted to Jesus, were filled with wonder, says Mark, at his otherworldly wisdom and his miraculous works. And yet, that led to their unfaith. See, something had scandalized them so quickly, and Mark records it in detail. The thing that offended them, that led them to a quick reversal of their high opinion of Jesus, was what we call Jesus's real presence. He was someone who was among them. He was near to them and normal. He had been brought up. They knew his relatives. He was so humble, and that is what the incarnation is that God does not come to us in glory. He comes to us in his humility. And the crowd is offended by that. Now, Mark doesn't interpret it for us. He leaves it for us to grapple with. And I think that they were offended. The crowd was offended because they believed that great things should be obviously spectacular. We are drawn to success, to people who are at the top, to the things that are obviously good and true. Whereas Jesus begins humbly, and again, the word humble is related to the word dirt. It's down to earth. It is, in Jesus's view, greatness isn't obviously great. When he defined greatness, it was the greatness of the small mustard seed. That is great not because it's big, it's great because it has hidden potentiality for a high ceiling of growth. And much of the mustard seed's greatness takes place buried deep within the earth, that literally in the humus or humility. So the humble, those who Jesus speaks to, are the small seeds that have lots of room for growth. Usually we think of the humble or the humiliating circumstances as negative, whereas with Jesus, the lower you go, the more room for growth there is and the greater potentiality. Now, how do you make this point? So Jesus, having expressed his amazement at unbelief, sent out his disciples in order to come to an understanding of what real faith was. But he didn't send his disciples out to convince the world with overwhelming military force or a bureaucratic plan or cunning advertisements. When he sent out his disciples to learn the truth and proclaim the truth he was trying to teach them about this humility, he sent them out materially vulnerable, and he gave them only a promise that those who heard and trusted their teaching would surprise them with their generosity and hospitality. So greatness the greatness Jesus was talking about was the message, the power of the message to change people and to create belief. And that belief would be expressed in generosity and hospitality. And it would be offered freely. And so Jesus then taught that if their teaching was not trusted, they were to leave quietly. And they were to take nothing with them that had not been freely given, not even the dust on their feet. And so Jesus recognizes that when, or is teaching that when we begin with this humility and expect grace to lift us out of the dirt, there is a huge amount of freedom that that trust gives. And in this exercise, the disciples learned to trust the truth that St. Paul would state was that God's grace is made perfect in our weakness. That our weaknesses are not liabilities, even though we experience them like that. Our weaknesses are the very context in which grace shows itself to be most gracious. That's hard to accept. If in fact we're grappling with weakness. And so the Psalm makes it clear. It says, okay, so I've been humbled. I've been humiliated. The Psalm declares, I lift up my eyes until he grants us grace. That's the beauty of humility. Grace is scandalous. That's what the gospel says, because its greatness is not obvious. Its greatness looks a lot like defeat and humiliation because of the downcast eyes of those who are vulnerable. And in the Psalm, the vulnerable have the image of the abject dependency of the slave on his master. But then comes the big surprise. Most slaves have a terrible relationship with the master because the master takes advantage of their vulnerability. But with God, the downcast eyes of the enslaved are drawn up by God. God is out to surprise us in our humble situation, and he lifts our eyes. Our eyes are drawn upward to us by a surprising grace coming from a superior who has nothing to gain from the slave. In other words, God is not gracious to us because there is something he wants from us. No, this is the surprise, that the superior who has nothing to gain from us still is willing to grant us grace. Now, what's interesting in the Psalm is that this grace, the Psalm says, is scorned by the smug who live in a predictable world that lacks the element of the surprise. The smug would never believe that a superior could look graciously on an inferior and want to grant them a grace, not to gain something, but to give something. And so we get an insight into the gospel as to why people were offended at Jesus. There's a kind of smugness that scorns this grace. And it scorns those who are willing to sit in their humility and wait for God's grace to come to them as a gift. So this grace is not something passive. It's not something that isn't at work. In fact, the smug seem to have it right. If this grace makes a promise that's very hard to believe that it will make good on. And that's why those who receive grace, Jesus says, will respond with generosity and hospitality because it is such a crazy, unpredictable, and satisfying gift. Now, Ezekiel gives us a different take on it, and there God says to Ezekiel that if he continues, or when he continues to proclaim the truth, the people won't accept it, but at least they will know that a prophet has been in their midst. So Ezekiel's claim that he prophesied, claimed that his prophecy was what he heard he had spoken. And the response to Ezekiel was that the smug listener scorned the concealed truth that he had proclaimed. See, that's what a prophet does. A prophet speaks about truthful things whose truthfulness has not yet been made evident. That's why it's so easy to be a false prophet, that you can say all sorts of things and say, well, this is going to, you'll see in the future. But that is what a prophet does, that God grants insight into how things will unfold, what will take place, but we don't even know until what has been spoken moves towards fulfillment. Now, I just want to take a little aside here. That word fulfillment is very elastic and versatile. Fulfillment can describe this movement of time that a prophet needs in order to validate the message. Fulfillment is the revealing of truth, and fulfillment is also the movement of our desires to satisfaction. So much of what grace does, when I talk about its potentiality, it fulfills us. And the word, again, I'll remind myself, is it's a compound word. It's a word that talks about a fullness and the means of filling, and it mashes it up together and says, you want to know how grace is actually functioning? It is a promised fullness, and the means of filling is humble but yet real. But there's a meantime between the prophecy and its fulfillment. The meantime is where we have to live by faith to be able to see the truth which is concealed. And in that meantime, we should expect to be scorned by the smug who live totally in the present, because they actually, without grace, have nothing to wait for. They have nothing to expect. Their sense of potentiality in the future is rather filled with despair about where things are going. And so Ezekiel was not promised success. In fact, God promised him the opposite. But at least there's something majorly important when people recognize that a prophet is living in hope for the future. And that hope is one of the great gifts of faith. 2 Corinthians is almost a direct interpretation of Jesus's of the gospel. Paul prayed repeatedly for physical health. Instead, Jesus gave him a satanic thorn in the flesh. And the reason for that thorn in the flesh is that it kept Paul dependent on God's grace. Paul was humiliated by his affliction, but he needed that affliction, he says, so that he could continually personally believe the truth that he was declaring. Paul recognized that is the temptation of those of us who are repeatedly called to bear witness to the truth. It's kind of a job. It becomes almost a habit. And Paul recognizes that if the preacher no longer personally believes and personally experiences the truth that he's preaching, there's something empty about it. And so Paul recognizes that the reason why God gave him his affliction was so that he would continually require the grace that would be perfected in his weakness. What a promise, that our weaknesses will not destroy us. That's what grace is. Grace gravitates toward weakness. Grace gravitates towards humility, because the more weak and wrecked a thing is, the more its perfection is marvelous. So the thorn in the flesh was not so much an affliction as it was a gift. And Paul says this affliction was a gift, in the same way that his rich spiritual experiences and his intellectual abilities were gifts. Paul saw his whole life as a gift. I mean, it was given to him for his own good and for his own growth. And Paul was a man of many gifts. And he seems to recognize that when you are as gifted as he was, you are vulnerable to spiritual pride. And spiritual pride is the antithesis of the truth of grace, which is given to a person not because of any kind of merit, but it's purely given to those who admit to their weakness. So Paul gives us a nice interpretation of why Jesus sent his disciples out to proclaim the truth by being materially vulnerable, because it's in that context in which grace shows itself to be the most gracious.
Thank you, David, and thank you for listening. All the podcasts from this series, Worth Doing Badly, are available from our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Try our app. Go to the App Store or Google Play and get the one that is right for you for free. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other programs on our schedule, write me an email to manager@lutheranradio.co.uk. David and I will be back next week at this same time. Stay on for more here on Lutheran Radio UK.